Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. You can be an active investor that does all the work, finds the market, puts together the team, rolls up your sleeves, even paints and carpets, or you might leave that work to somebody else and invest passively in real estate. A lot of ways to do that. Today, we're going to talk about passive investing with real estate investment funds. And we've got a great guest on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. With me, as usual, it's our co-host and financial strategist, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
Not only is there a lot of real estate in the world to invest in, there's all kinds of ways to invest in real estate. The typical real estate investor starts out with maybe a house they live in, and they decide, you know, if I had two houses, one to rent and one to live in, that'd be cool. And because they're used to a single family home, they go out and they buy another single family home, and then maybe they move, and rather than sell their home, they keep it as a rental, and so on. That's a pretty common way to approach real estate investing. As you get more and more property, you get more and more problems. Now, that's not a bad thing. We get paid to solve problems as real estate investors, but you've got to think about who's collecting the rent and who's monitoring the tenant's behavior and who's checking out the property. So either you manage it yourself, which some of our listeners do, or you find competent third-party management. Now, pretty soon, you get a portfolio that becomes a job, and you have to decide, is that for me to manage? Is that for someone else to manage? And that's kind of a traditional path. But there's another path we want to talk about today, and that's investing through real estate funds. And a real estate fund has a specific purpose. It's going to do what you would do, invest in a particular type of real estate, maybe in a geographic area, maybe a product type. It's going to have an idea of what it wants to do. The difference is it's likely not to invest just in a single property, although that's possible. And it's usually not just a single investor. It's multiple investors that come together to share both the risks and the rewards.
Yeah, I think, you know, we spend a lot of time on this show talking about the opportunity for individual investors, individual real estate investors to go out and become what we call syndicators and put together funds and aggregate private capital from private investors. We don't spend as much time necessarily talking to those private investors. But I think in today's environment, with the volatility we've had in the stock market, so many people who have been laid off and now have the availability of their 401ks to roll over and big chunks of capital maybe that they didn't realize they had access to available, they're looking at other things. And maybe some of those folks are listening to a show like this saying, hey, I'm interested in real estate. And the way they think of investing in real estate from a fund perspective would be like a real estate investment trust, which is like a mutual fund of real estate properties. And typically a REIT, although they can invest in a lot of different things, typically invest in commercial properties because they're playing at scale. And one of the reasons you go commercial is because the deals are bigger. Right? I mean, it takes a lot of time and effort to run around and find 20,000 single family homes versus a half a dozen or a dozen really, really big buildings, the types of things that life insurance companies and institutions invest in. So if you're that kind of investor, there's a place in the private world, you know, you kind of like a private equity world where you are Main Street investing in Main Street. And that's really what we're going to be talking about today. If you've been driving around your community and you see somebody building an apartment building, or you see a self-storage unit going up, or you see different types of real estate being constructed or being operated, a lot of times those aren't owned by individual investors. and they're not owned by institutional investors. There's this middle space that used to be the good old boys club. It used to be the only way you got to know about those types of investments and could invest right in your own community or without going through the layers and layers and layers of middlemen that make up the Wall Street machinery was if you had a relationship and you knew somebody. But they opened up the law now where people who put those types of deals together are allowed to tell you about them. And we've been excited about that on both sides of the equation, both for the people who want to put the deals together and seek out investors, but also for the investors who suddenly have this whole new world of opportunity available to them. Now, although it's been there for a while, I don't know that the circumstances to make it interesting have been as strong as they are right now. And so this is a great time to be talking about this particular topic.
Well, and really, depending on the type of investor you are, a fund can make sense for you in so many ways. I'll tell you, my first exposure to a real estate fund is when I was out adding to my portfolio, mostly in multifamily residential, and I was making a lot of money, and I had the opportunity to passively invest in a commercial, a retail deal, in fact, ground-up construction in a completely different state. So it checked a lot of boxes. It was diverse. It was some different type of property in a different area. It had a great team involved. But for me, it was very passive. And as an active hands-on real estate investor, that was music to my ears. Hey, all I do is write a check. That sounds pretty cool. And that was a really great experience. I'll tell you that full story if you come out to our Secrets of Successful Syndication seminar in September. But the concept is that you can passively invest while you actively get involved with the type of property, who the operator is, the demographics, and all of that. So there's work to be done, but it's not as much work as, say, managing a single family house. On the other side, we definitely have listeners who get to a point where they've got a portfolio that's kind of at that tipping point, and they either are going to pull the trigger and go full-time, or they're going to step up to the next level of real estate investing, which isn't actually managing your own portfolio, but putting together a fund. Today, we're going to meet a gentleman that's exactly what he does. He has a multitude of real estate investment funds, and they look at specific markets, specific product types, and we're going to find out not only how they approach that business, but also how is the fund business weathering the storm of COVID-19? We come back, you'll meet our friend Paul Moore today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
When the world changes, investing strategy changes too. The coronavirus is disrupting economies, financial systems, and daily life like nothing in modern history. Sheltering in place might protect you from the virus, but a wait-and-see approach to investing now is like pulling the sheets over your head while the house burns down. It's not the time to be complacent. So we're calling our huge network of thought leaders, seasoned investors, and technical experts to find out what they're seeing, thinking, and doing to mitigate risk and capture opportunity, and we're recording all of it. We're calling it our Coronavirus Crisis Investing Webinar, and it's totally free. All you need to do is register. Remember, mainstream media doesn't talk to real estate investors. They don't understand you because Wall Street pays them not to. That's why the Real Estate Guys are here. To register for the Crisis Investing Webinar, simply send an email to crisis@realestateguysradio.com. That's crisis@realestateguysradio.com. Real world wisdom is the best vaccine for a healthy financial future. Send your email to crisis@realestateguysradio.com.
In uncertain times like this, it's great to know there are two things you can always count on. High demand for affordable single-family homes to live in, and Terry Kerr's amazing Memphis team at Mid-South Home Buyers to find, fix, and manage the next addition to your recession-resistant real estate portfolio. The Memphis market is logistics and distribution dynamo with an economic engine that's essential to moving goods and critical supplies all over the United States. Quality rehab, proven profitable property management, affordable rents, and solid ROI make turnkey property investing through Terry's team a dream when it matters most. To learn more about Memphis and Mid-South home buyers, send an email to midsouth@realestateguysradio.com. That's midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
Hello, I'm Herman Cain, and you are listening to the Dynamic Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every weekend on this great radio station, all the time at realestateguysradio.com and your favorite podcast outlets. Oh my gosh, there's so many ways to invest in real estate, and I'd like to introduce you to a friend of ours who is a fund investor and manager. Please welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program from Wellings Capital, Paul Moore. Hey, Paul.
Hey, great to see you guys.
Well, it's great to see you. I wish we were in person like we have been in the past, but boy, this whole lockdown thing has forced us into new habits and opportunities. Tell us about how things are going for you in the light of coronavirus.
You know, we didn't really know what to expect. I mean, obviously, we're in an unprecedented time in history. We've been preaching for years to tell people, you know, don't overpay for multifamily or single family or anything else. There's no reason to do that. I think that that message has really resonated with folks since this crisis hit. Late February, we opened our latest fund, our third fund. And a few days before the stock market took the plunge that we all remember well, and we opened the new fund, and in the first month, actually, all the news, you know, the news was just constant. You know, the lockdown happened and everything else in the coronavirus happened. But a lot of people gravitated to our message. And I think that what we've been saying for 4 years has really resonated with people with the recession-resistant asset classes, et cetera, in our funds.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you would think that would be a terrible time to go to the market with a fund. Part of that was still people's interest and the pent-up demand you had, because you don't just open a fund to do it. You have to wait till you have all the pieces in place and good properties and so forth. We'll talk about that part. But all of a sudden here, we're faced with this pandemic and everything changes. And yet, because of the nature of the types of assets you guys invest in and the fact that the people that invest into your funds are passive investors, it's not the same. It's not the same as someone being an escrow on a property and going, oh my gosh, are the tenants going to pay? It's a little different mentality. But I wanted you to tell that story, because what really happened, the real world case, was you raised a bunch of money and then decided, well, based on everything happening, we're going to just press pause for a minute. Talk about that part of it.
Yeah. So we actually raised a record amount of money for us in the month of March. We had three different reactions from investors during that time. We had investors who jumped in early, let's say right after February 27th when I did my webinar, and then they got scared and they pulled out before they funded toward the end of the month. There weren't very many of them, but there were some. There was a second group that pulled out for another reason, which I thought was a good reason, and that is they wanted to have dry powder. They could see that there were going to be opportunities coming up, and I applauded them. I said, you know, if you've got opportunities you think on the horizon, maybe it would be a good time just to sit and wait. We're going to reopen the fund at some point anyway. And then we had a third group, and the largest group by far were people who didn't plan to come in, and they jumped in at the last minute when, again, our message resonated with them. So at the end of March, we decided to go ahead and push pause on the fund, and it's been paused through April and May. We're evaluating other opportunities. We've been evaluating syndicators for years, and we have a whole long list of people we love, but only a very short list of people who meet our criteria for us to invest with. We have a fiduciary responsibility to our investors and our families to invest in only the very, very best deals and with the best operators. And so we're pretty picky on that. We're actually flying to California tomorrow to visit a couple other operators. We're hoping to add a couple other operators and reopen the fund in the next couple weeks for at least a limited raise in June.
Well, let's talk about the nature of your fund, because when we talk about real estate syndication on the show, you typically can syndicate anything. It doesn't have to be real estate. The model just works well for real estate, raising capital from individual investors to go do a bigger deal. Oftentimes, syndication is a single property. You've got a 200-unit apartment building and you need to raise $1.8 million. So you put it out to the market and you go through all the legal paperwork and you've got a list to talk to and you find investors that fit the criteria and your investment fits them. What you guys do is a little bigger than that. And this is the distinction we want to make about a fund. Your funds have multiple properties, and that gives certain diversity. Talk about why the fund model makes sense for you guys and for investors in general.
One of the things we really love about funds is the diversification. We see diversification across five or six different metrics. Number one, we're diversifying across operators, because we know that some operators obviously are going to do better than others. And we also are diversifying across geographies, across asset types. We're in a couple different recession-resistant asset types. across the individual assets, but we're also diversifying across two other ways that people don't usually think of. Number one, we're diversifying across strategies. So we have operators in our fund that are able to go in, make significant changes, pay a fair price to a mom and pop seller, make significant changes in year one, reap the higher net operating income in year two, and then perhaps sell the property in year three. We have other operators, however, who are a little slower. They might buy from a mom and pop as well, make improvements, and then they plan to hold 5 years, refinance, and then hold, you know, 5 or 10 more years. So we have both of those in the fund. So we have diversification of strategy. And then last, we have diversification across time. Now, that sounds like a strange thing, but diversification across time means that an investor that's investing, let's say June of 2020, is getting the benefit of assets that have already been purchased and essentially de-risked. So, I mean, they're basically buying into a portfolio, and about 3/4 of the assets, we're in the range of 20-something assets right now where we sit, about 15 or so have already been essentially de-risked, which means the margin of safety is dramatically higher than at the time of purchase. As a metric for that, our debt service coverage ratio right now, you know that DCR or DSCR, generally the banks want to see 25 or 30%. So 1.25, 1.35, we're actually at 2.33 right now because investors coming in are getting advantage again of these largely de-risked properties, which makes us really sleep at night better.
And it's one of the big attractions of investing in a fund because you've got those diversities you talked about, and there's going to be a home run or two, there's going to be a grand slam, and there's going to be maybe not strikeouts, but a couple of just base hits, and all of that's going to work together in a way that provides a more predictable return. It's certainly not guaranteed. It's not debt financing. It's none of that. But these are pretty well protected pieces of collateral because you've done your work on the front end. Now, you talked about operators. So this is also something to get your minds around if you're thinking about a fund. There are some people who raise funds to operate properties. So they are both the fund manager and the operator. They have a property management company and they manage portfolios and they raise money to do that. That's not how you guys operate. You aren't the operator of the properties. You're looking for not only the property, but also the operator.
Right. You know, Warren Buffett doesn't make ice cream. He doesn't write insurance policies. He doesn't build mobile homes, but he has ownership of all of that. And one of the ways he goes about it that's so brilliant is he puts a lot of stock in the management team. He loves getting the right management team. I believe, if I remember his biography right, in 1979, after a 15-minute phone call with Tom Murphy of Capital Cities, he decided to invest better part of $1 billion to acquire ABC. 17 years later, they sold it to Disney for billions of profit. He was able to make that decision in 15 minutes because he trusted Tom Murphy so much. So we spend a lot of time getting to know the operators, getting to know everything about them, getting to know their company, the way they treat their employees, the way they speak to the waitress or waiter or the flight attendant or the way they speak about their wife. All that matters to us, and we take it all into account. The level of due diligence we do on the operator has paid huge dividends for us.
Well, and we would argue that the team is always more important than the property. In this case, the operator can lead you to potential properties. The operator can stay with you and help shepherd you through whatever comes in the market, whereas the deal's the deal. I mean, a deal's a one-time transaction, so it's always more important who's doing the work. And then your job as the fund manager is you kind of manage the operators, if you will. Talk about that process. How do you interface with these operators to know what's going on, and how often do you then take that information and let the investors know?
One thing we didn't want to do is there are a lot of large money institutionals who try to take control, and we've seen them to hit their metrics, you know, Wall Street type metrics. They're actually forcing the operator to sell. Maybe we heard of one that was sold, they made the operator sell 9 months early and they left half of the potential return on the table. And it was terrible for the operator, terrible for them. We actually we want to trust them so much. We want such a good operator that we would never want to take control. However, we do stay in close touch with them. I talked to one of our operators today by phone, another via text. We stay in close touch and we get regular updates to what they're looking at, what's happening out there, how collections are looking, what's going on. So we keep very, very close touch with these folks and we report it back to our investors. You know, our plan was quarterly, but with COVID going on, we're doing it at least twice per quarter, more like once a month right now.
Well, and that makes sense. We've been talking on this show about overly communicating with your tenants, with your vendors, with your partners, and certainly with the passive investors. They want to know what's going on, and they many times have more time in the day to be thinking about that stuff. But let's talk big picture on the way you put a fund together. You mentioned this is your third fund and you're looking at maybe 20 assets. So that's enough to get that diversification you talked about, but not so big that it becomes a behemoth with a lot of layers of management and all that kind of thing. There's kind of two ways you can do these funds. They can be open or closed. Is this a specific amount of properties or amount of capital, or when do you decide to close a fund and that's it, and now the next thing you'll do is move on to a new fund?
Yeah, we're quite intentional about that. It is a closed-ended fund, and we plan to close this one by the end of the year, which would be December 31st. We put a provision in the documents that we could run it as late as one full year, which would be February 27th, 2021. As far as amount, we're shooting for $15 million in this fund, but again, we have a provision we could go up to $30 million. We have about 22 assets in there right now. I expect by fall we'll have close to 30 assets in the fund, but that is not the primary concern. If we're investing with a new operator, we might, you know, just invest a smaller amount. And maybe we'd only invest, you know, $250,000 with a new operator. And that might be five new properties, but a very small amount in total as a percentage of our fund. And we do that again to run a test with them and see if they really follow through exactly the way that they appear to up front.
Now, Paul, I know another thing you're very intentional about is product type. We're not going to talk about that yet. We will. We haven't mentioned what you invest in. And that's really because we want the listeners to understand kind of the mindset behind investing through a fund, both from you as a fund manager and a passive investor, what they might look at. So let's talk about that for a minute. Someone says, hey, I like what you do. I get it. I'm busy and don't want to do it myself. I want you guys to handle it for me. What are the timelines? Can they get in or out? Is it a closed-ended in terms of how long the fund's out there, minimums to invest? Talk about those kinds of things.
Warren Buffett said that he wishes sometimes that the market would just close right after he makes a large investment, and you know, so he can hold on to it without regard to the ups and downs daily on Wall Street for the next 10 years or so, or even indefinitely. And we feel the same way. We feel like the best way to invest is a long-term hold. But there are people who see that as a disadvantage, and they would not want to invest with us. If they want to jump in and jump out, move their money around, that would not be a good fit for what we do. We have a long-term view. So our fund, although we think it'll be mostly cashed out before 10 years, we actually have a 10-year horizon. There are provisions for people to sell their shares. But again, if people think they want to do that in advance, we're going to encourage them not to invest with us.
Glad you brought that up. It's such an important point. We talk about personal investment philosophy, and it's no different when you're investing passively in a fund to have a personal investment philosophy, which is how long do I want to put my money to work? I always find it interesting when I talk to investors who don't want to commit for more than a year or two, and they don't recognize or realize that short-term real estate has to work overtime to create returns because of the transaction costs involved, this time that it takes to get that property up and running and turned around, and a lot of the work you guys do on the front end that your operators are doing to get that to the next level of cash flow. Those things take time. And really, what's so important, right? You've got money you've got to set aside to invest in, whether that's through a retirement account or cash or whatever that looks like, and you have a time horizon, and it's critical that you're in sync with whoever you invest with. So I'm glad you're upfront about that. I know you are certainly transparent about that with folks because it is kind of a long-term investment. Other syndications and funds, maybe they're flipping houses or they're doing a quick ground-up construction of something and it might be a shorter time frame, but this is kind of a long-term buy and hold mentality. Based on that, you have cash flows and so forth. How often do you make payouts? And you don't have to talk about projected returns necessarily. Folks that are interested can certainly reach out to you guys. But talk about just kind of that, when you're adding properties, what stage they're at, and then how often there's cash flow to the investors.
Yeah, so when we're adding properties, they're usually mom and pop sellers, which means we're giving them what in their mind is a very fair price. And it is a fair price for what they have, but they're usually in the path of progress. And so that means that and when I say that, I mean specific to that asset. They might have, the seller might not be in a position to add value, or they might not have the desire. They may be older. They may not have the resources. For example, there may be a large vacancy that can be filled, or there may be other value adds we can talk about later in the show, specifics for that. And so these are typically properties that are already cash flowing, maybe 5%, but they can be quickly upgraded to where they're cash flowing 8, 9, 10%. So we project a 5% return in year one, 6 or 7 in year two, 7 or 8 in year three. We have a 9% preferred return hurdle we offer investors. And we do, after the first full quarter of the investment, investors can expect, if there is a payout, and there always has been so far, we are planning for a monthly distribution of cash flow to the investors.
Okay, so a couple of things there, and then we'll take our break and come back and talk about the product types you invest in. You mentioned recession resistance, so we'll cover what that is, what that looks like. But when you talk about a preferred return, no investor left behind, what that means is that instead of it just being some sort of split between the manager and the investors, that there is this hurdle that the first investment goes to the investors. And talk about that part of it, because that appeals to a certain mindset of investor.
Yeah, we feel like it's really important to be aligned, obviously, with our investors. And by offering a preferred hurdle or preferred return, as it's called, that means the investor gets paid first. If there's cash to be paid out, it's the first 9% other than our admin fee is paid out to the investor. And then there's a split above that. And there's a really important, but a little bit hard to understand issue with funds and preferred returns. Now think about it. If you invest in 20 individual properties, 10 do really well and 10 do really poorly. Well, the preferred hurdle rate will be surpassed in the 10 that do well, and the operator will get their share of the profits. With the 10 that do poorly, the operator or the fund manager in our case would not get their share, and perhaps the investor wouldn't even hit their hurdle rate. But with a fund, that's an additional type of diversification, because all 20 on in total will have to surpass the hurdle rate for us to be able to share in the profits. So we're motivated, we're already motivated to do really well for us and our investors, but we have an additional level of motivation as a fund model, because we're not going to see a penny of profit until the total group of 20 surpass the hurdle rate. So if 10 do poorly, 10 do well, we may just hit the hurdle rate and not share in the profits.
We're talking about passive investing and active investing in real estate funds. Our guest is Paul Moore from Wellings Capital. When we come back, we'll find out exactly the asset classes that Paul prefers and why. Plus, we'll play real estate trivia next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to The Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
Don't be like Charlie, who scans the internet for IRA information, often getting bad information from copycats who have no idea what they're doing. You deserve to work with a reputable firm that specializes in one thing, the EQRP. Lucky for you, Congress just made it possible for you to get up to $200,000 out of your current 401k or TSP so you can invest that money in real estate or even your own business. Even if you're still working, it's possible to get access to all this money tax-free. Whether you're a full-time investor, a doctor, or a government employee, even if you have employees, the EQRP is your secret weapon. You'll never see this strategy in Money Magazine, only here with the Real Estate Guys. Every major accounting firm in America is quietly sharing this strategy with their wealthy clients, helping them get their funds freed from 401k jail. Hi, I'm Damian Lupo, and we have your solution. With the CARES Act expiring soon, this strategy will be gone forever. The EQRP company is ready to help you unleash your retirement funds now. Want to learn more about this strategy? Send an email to eqrp@realestateguysradio.com for my special EQRP report today.
Hungry for more real estate investing ideas? Here's two steps you can take today. First, go to realestateguysradio.com and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get access to a continuous feed of thought-provoking commentary specifically for real estate investors, while also focusing on broader picture economics. Then, once you're at our site, look for the Resources tab, where you'll find our amazing collection of special reports. Browse dozens of white papers, webinars, and market reports, and request the ones that appeal to you. What are you waiting for? Head to realestateguysradio.com to implement education for effective action.
Hey, it's Ken McElroy. I listen to The Real Estate Guys, and so should you.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys Radio Show. Thanks for tuning into the program today. If you've not yet signed up for our crisis webinar, it's going to be amazing, and it's completely free. All you have to do is send an email to crisis@realestateguysradio.com, crisis@realestateguysradio.com. We're talking today about investing in real estate via a fund, and we've got Paul Moore on the program. Before we get back to that interview, it's time to play Real Estate Trivia. That's your chance to win a prize by knowing today's Real Estate Trivia question. Just a minute, I'm going to give you a question that has something to do with real estate. When you hear the question and think you know the answer, you're going to fire off your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com, trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address, because the first person that gets it right is going to get an extraordinary book called Don't Quit, Stories of Persistence, Courage, and Faith, a collection of amazing stories by awesome people put together by our good friend Kyle Wilson. That could be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Last week on the show, we talked about coronavirus, civil unrest, unemployment, and other good news for real estate investors, and we asked this: what's the hottest temperature ever recorded in the state of Alaska? Well, the answer is 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Yep, the state hit the 100 mark in June of 1915 in Fort Yukon, an Arctic Circle city on the banks of the Yukon River. Alaska often doesn't get too hot, and the last time it was 100 degrees was more than 100 years ago. Speaking of U.S. states, here's our real estate trivia question for this week. In which U.S. state is it illegal for a person to walk down the street with an ice cream cone in their back pocket? Yeah, I'm serious. In fact, this law is actually on the books in three different U.S. states, so you just have to name one of them. Which states in the U.S. is it illegal for a person to walk down the street with an ice cream cone in their back pocket? If somehow you know that, or you just want to take a guess, send your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. You'll need to send us the answer to the question, your name, and your physical mailing address so that we can send you Don't Quit, Stories of Persistence, Courage, and Faith. That's today's real estate trivia question. We're talking about investing not in a specific property in your own name, but investing in a fund that invests. Lots of reasons to consider that. Our guest is Paul Moore, and we're talking about the way that they approach real estate investing from a fund perspective. What we haven't done yet, Paul, is talk about the types of real estate that you invest in. Now, your background is pretty broad in real estate. So before we talk about specifically what's in your fund, give us the nickel tour on kind of your personal background in real estate investing.
Yeah, so I sold my company to a publicly traded firm in 1997 and jumped into real estate in 2000, 20 years ago. And I found myself flipping a lot of houses, became a builder, and I found out something. I found out that if you don't know how to tighten the doorknob on your own home, you probably shouldn't build a ground-up home, but that didn't stop me. I did that for a while, flipped a lot of high-end waterfront lots in resort areas, started a couple internet marketing companies to create leads for realtors. I still have one of those. Did a subdivision. And all during that time, I was curious about commercial real estate, but I didn't know who to trust, I didn't know where the on-ramp was. I didn't know how much capital I would need. And finally, in 2011, after investing in an oil and gas deal in the Bakken in North Dakota, we built a multifamily asset in North Dakota. We managed that and owned that for a number of years. And then I jumped into multifamily investing. And I've been in multifamily and a couple other commercial asset classes ever since.
Now, you are on your third fund, and let's talk about the types of assets that you have in those funds and why you chose them.
Yeah, so we really like multifamily. I did write a book called humbly entitled The Perfect Investment about multifamily. We still love multifamily. We've been a little concerned about the pricing in multifamily and the place we are in the risk cycle right now. So we chose to invest in two other asset classes. That's mobile home parks and self-storage as well in our funds. And we've actually been focused completely on those two asset classes for the last couple of years. However, we're very open to adding multifamily when the time's right.
Yeah, that's great. Multifamily certainly very competitive, has been for years. And of course, that, you know, knocks the cap rates down and there's just more competition. Doesn't make it a bad thing. I think we love multifamily. It's just finding a deal. But you also mentioned the recession resistant part. Some multifamily is fairly recession resistant based on its strata in the income areas. But with mobile home parks, especially, one of the things about mobile homes in general, it's a lot of bang for the buck for the occupants. They get bigger square footage, more utility for lesser money, and yet that can turn out to be pretty lucrative for owners and operators. Talk about the attraction to mobile, not a mobile home, but to a mobile home park.
Yeah, I actually did invest in 4 mobile homes over the years, and were some of the worst investments I ever made, because managing corporate-owned or, you know, operator-owned mobile homes is really, really challenging, to say the least. And the amount of damage and the amount of repair per year is just enormous. Operating a mobile home park is like owning land, having a land lease, and actually cooperating with the tenant. So unlike an apartment or many other leases, the tenant is actually bringing or owning their own home. They're in charge of the maintenance, they're in charge of the upkeep, and they're leasing the piece of land from us. And the great thing about it, like you said, is the number of square feet per dollar spent is much, much higher than most other asset classes. It is the lowest rung on the housing ladder. So if someone's bounced out of a home to a smaller one or from an apartment down, they're probably going to land on a mobile home park, or they're going to end up under a bridge, which of course we don't want to see that happen to anybody. But the tenants are very sticky as a result of that, and the fact that it's very, very expensive to move a mobile home out. And people typically won't do that just because they don't like the operator or they get a $30 rent increase.
I also like the fact that with mobile homes, they feel different than a typical tenant because they either own outright or are paying to own. In some cases, they rent the home from operators, but they have a different mentality about what their rent is for. And the rent is a relatively small amount compared to, say, the payment on the home. So it's more often made. And one of the things I specifically wanted to ask you about, with this large portfolio of mobile homes, what have you seen with coronavirus and unemployment and just the things that we're seeing in multifamily and single family rental homes?
Well, as you said in your last show, there are a lot of people in this income strata that are making more money right now at the moment than they were when they were employed or when they were fully employed before. And so we're actually quite happily surprised at collections in our mobile home parks over the last 3 months. They're actually up in percentage and in dollars. And the waiting list to get in the mobile home parks is growing as people are anticipating the need to get a lower priced housing solution.
Yeah, back to that recession resistant part. It also kind of works countercyclically when the markets are tough. When we've seen kind of the downturns in markets, mobile home parks tend to do really well. But one of the things your fund focuses on isn't just to buy an asset because it does well in good or bad times, but to tune it up, to tweak it, to get up to that next level of income that you talked about. What are the main ways you do that with mobile home parks?
Well, there are some ways. We went to Louisville, Kentucky in January, and we met the operator there, and he was acquiring a mobile home park with about 315 spaces for $7.1 million. Now, he acquired that and made the press release February 21st. On February 26th, about 2 days after the market tanked, he got an offer of $9.5 million on that $7.1 million purchase, and he turned it down without countering. Wow. Why would he do that? Amazing return in a short amount of time for his portfolio and our fund. Three reasons. Number one, well, let me set the stage. The owner had passed away 5 years ago, and the owner's spouse had never visited the park in those 5 years. She lived several states away. Well, there were 50 vacant pads out of the 315 pads, and he believes, and we can dive into how later, but he believes he can fill about one a month, and that's going to significantly increase income. Secondly, the rent was quite a bit below market. It hadn't been raised in years, and though he doesn't want to gouge those tenants, not at all, he wants to bring it up a little closer to market level, and that will significantly impact the income. Third, unlike all the other mobile home parks in the area, the owner was still paying water and sewer, and that was $213,000 a year. He's going to be able to meter that, pass it back to the tenants. They'll be far more cost conscious on their use of water and sewer, and he will be passing that $213,000 a year back to them. The combined total of those three changes is going to allow him to have a value in a short time from that $7.1 million purchase of $12 to $14 million. So at $12 million, let's just say he put $3 million in equity and $4.1 million in debt on that, which is about what he did. At $12 million, that $3 million in equity is going to be worth $8 million in equity. And at 14, it would be worth $10 million in equity in a short time. That's without paying the loan down. That's why he turned down the $9.5 million offer, as you can imagine.
Well, and it brings up another really important point when it comes to mobile home parks. You know, when we think about single family homes, they're not in a perfect market, but almost so. You list the home on the local MLS, and whatever buyers there are out there are going to raise the price to a market level by definition. Many times, the people who own mobile home parks are exactly who you described. They're mom and pops, many of them in their 70s and 80s. Sometimes they're completely hands-off. They were in the game when they bought it, and it just kind of, and so you see all these run-down and terribly managed parks. That creates opportunity. It's one of the reasons that it's a hard niche to get into as your first investment, or if you've never been around the mobile home world. And that's why I certainly think a fund makes a ton of sense, because you've got the leverage of not just multiple parks, but multiple levels of expertise in managing this kind of asset.
Right. Multifamily, for example, has a tremendous number of great professional property managers all over the country, even in mid-sized towns. But the mobile home park world is quite fragmented in their ownership. There are 44,000 parks in the U.S. We believe that 40,000 are owned by mom and pops. They're usually self-managed. So there aren't great management companies that are easy to find in the mobile home park space. So it's really important, in my mind, to link up with someone who's a professional who has their own team or knows how to find those type of teams.
All right, good stuff. Well, we've learned a ton about funds today and about mobile home parks, and you're a guy that educates as well. And one of the things you're offering our listeners, which we love, is a five-part e-course on not mobile home parks, but the broader topic of an introduction to commercial real estate. Talk about what's in the course.
Yeah. So if you invest in a single family home, you can increase its value, but it's still going to be limited by the comps, the other homes in the neighborhood. And that's fine. We believe in that asset class as well. But commercial real estate is quite different. It's based on a value formula. And that value is the net operating income divided by the rate of return or the cap rate. And so we want to give investors an opportunity to get a good broad brush understanding of commercial real estate, how it's valued, how to find it yourself, or how to find it invest as a passive investor. So this is a 5-day e-course we're offering to people who would be interested in something like that.
All right. Well, that's an awesome offer. We appreciate that. When we come back, we'll tell you how you can get that five-part commercial real estate investing course from Paul. Always great to talk to you. Thanks for the myriad of information today on the program and continued success with your funds.
Thanks, Robert. Thanks, Russell.
There's Paul Moore. But more when we come back, you're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Real Estate Guys listeners, are you tired of losing real estate deals due to financing issues? Have you had enough of waiting on banks, lenders, and investor groups to fund new projects? What if there were a way to eliminate all the hassle and invest in real estate on your own terms? I'm here to tell you there is. Patrick Donahoe here from Paradigm Life. I'm an Investopedia Top 100 Most Influential Financial Advisor, and I recently wrote a best-selling book about the financial strategy that changed my entire investment model, and the one that could change yours. To get a copy of my book for free and learn how you can maximize your real estate portfolio by acting as your own bank, send an email to mybank@realestateguysradio.com. Don't make another real estate deal without reading my book first. Email mybank@realestateguysradio.com now to get your copy for free.
Hey, it's Gene from the Residential Assisted Living Academy. The silver tsunami of seniors is coming. You've been hearing me tell you about that for years now on the Real Estate Guys, and it's true. You know, with everything that's going on in our world today, the safest place for a senior to be is a residential assisted living facility. The best place to be for cash flowing real estate in the current economy is residential assisted living. You know, I've been telling you about it. The silver tsunami is here. But if you'd like to learn more, be educated, and get the information that can really propel you into the future, I'd love to share that with you.
To gain access to an informational webinar presented by certified financial planner and real estate entrepreneur Gene Guarino and discover how you can turn a nice home in a nice neighborhood into a cash flow machine, send an email to ALF, A-L-F, at realestateguysradio.com. That's ALF at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Kim Kiyosaki. I'm the author of Rich Woman, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
And welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. We're so glad you tuned in today, and you got a great show, too. And really excited about Paul Moore putting together that e-course on commercial real estate. You're going to learn something for sure, and all you have to do to get a copy of the course is send an email to commercialcourse@realestateguysradio.com, commercialcourse@realestateguysradio.com, and you'll get all the details. Always great to hear from Paul Moore.
Yeah, it's great. You know, there's so many things. I love just being a fly on the wall because I get to sit here and I listen to, you know, these conversations that you have with all these brilliant people. And I pick up little things. And one of the things I picked up there that I realized, and this is true with many of the guests that we end up having on the show, is they're abundant. They think abundantly. And you can tell because when someone's an educator, when someone is willing to take the time to share their very best ideas and do the hard work, and you and I both know it's hard work to organize those thoughts, those gut instincts, the experience that you've developed through all the ups and downs, the wins and the losses of life, and you get them all into something that you're willing to share with people, especially when you're giving it away for free, that's really a symptom of an abundance mindset. And when you have an abundance mindset, one of the things that I've learned in life is you have the ability not only to give, but you have the ability to create. And obviously, there's nothing more that you could ask for, maybe pun intended, you know, with Paul Moore. But there's nothing more you could ask for from someone that you're going to entrust your money with than the ability to create more, to create abundance. And the other thing that I picked up on there was the strategic thinking. And I think one of the things, you know, we talked at the top of the show about talking to that passive investor. This is almost like passive-passive income investing. You know, a lot of active investors invest in passive income vehicles, but they're active investors, right? So they're active-passive income investors. That's what a typical real estate investor is. But somebody who's going to invest in a fund that is investing for passive income is a passive-passive income investor. So if you're going to be that type of a passive investor, you're not just interested in the asset class, although you taking a course like this helps you understand what the asset picker is thinking and the process that they go through, but you're really hiring that strategic level of thinking. And one of the things that I noticed about Paul is he's a strategic thinker. I mean, he picks his markets, he picks his product classes, he picks his product mix, he picks his business model. Some of the things that he said, I'd encourage people to go back and listen to this over again. If you're listening to the podcast version of the show, if you're on the radio version, then go visit the archives at realestateguysradio.com under listen and find the episode. Listen to it again and really think through the things that Paul was talking about with respect to diversification and investment strategy. And even if you were able to replicate all of that thinking, which would be hard enough to do, the next thing you have to do is replicate the scale. If you don't have the ability to operate at a scale a strategic thinker is operating at, even if you know exactly how to do what they do, you still can't do it. Now, if you think you want to, well, that's where you flip over to the active passive income investor, a syndicator, and you do what Paul does, which is you create funds. And of course, we'd love to teach you how to do that. We think it's probably the greatest business opportunity in real estate, certainly one of the great business opportunities in the world right now, especially with what's going on in the world right now.
Well, I also, you know, appreciate about Paul his humility. His last appearance on the show was actually on Halloween Horror Stories. So a guy that has done stuff that didn't turn out well and gotten the lesson and then shared those lessons. Being able to watch the trajectory of going from, you know, flipping houses to now managing managers, if you will, and operators. And that's just a very different, more broad, more abundant way to go. And so for someone considering passive investing, what you want to look for is the three things we talk about. That is, you want to vet the horse. That's the deal. But you also want to vet the jockey, the person riding the horse, the operator. And you also want to vet the track the horse runs on, which is the market that it's in. So market's important, the product type, and the physical product is important, and the plan to improve it, and then the operator's critical. The greatest horse ever can't win the Kentucky Derby or any other race without a jockey. So to me, that's the most important thing. I want to make sure I understand the market for sure, the track. I want to make sure I understand the deal and I get where the value adds are and all that. But at the end of the day, this is a people business and you want to make sure the people involved are watching. And I think in this case, when you look at investing passively in a fund, there's one additional level of oversight, and that is the fund manager. You've got the operators who are doing their job to get the asset working and performing, but the manager of the investment is going to look at the bigger picture and make sure that everything's in context. If I'm running a mobile home park in Louisville, then I've got my head down and that's what I'm focused on, and you need that. But you also need Paul and his team to step back and go, okay, big picture, what does that look like? So a lot of advantages to investing in a fund, a lot of advantages to putting together a fund too. If you've got expertise, if you have a niche, if you have a great team already set up investing in your own account, maybe the next step for you is syndication. Coming up at the end of September, it's our two-day course, The Secrets of Successful Syndication. Our plan is to do it live in Dallas, Texas, but we're fully prepared to do it virtually like we did in March, which was actually the biggest one we'd ever done and some of the best response we ever had. So maybe we don't want to be live in a room drinking beers. No, we do. We definitely do. So if you're interested in learning more about either passively investing in a fund or syndication, or you're thinking, hey, my next level of real estate career is to put together something like this, then come on out. You can get all the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. Hey, if you'd like to take the 5-part e-course on an introduction to commercial real estate investing, even those of you that have invested already in commercial assets are probably going to learn something or certainly reinforce some of what you've learned. All you have to do is send an email to commercialcourse@realestateguysradio.com. That'll also get you Paul's contact information. So if it sounds interesting to you to invest in mobile home parks or self-storage in this way, then you can reach out. We'll leave that ball in your court. Big thanks to Paul for sharing his energy and enthusiasm and great ideas. Next week, another fabulous show. Until then, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton.
Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723 extension 4. That's 888-489-7723 extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.